there, it's Elisa from Napoleon Cat, and you're tuning into Social Media Made Simple, the podcast where we discuss how to make social media easy and fun for businesses like yours. We've got all the tips on growing online, understanding your competition, and making your team shine. You're in the right place if you want to get more from social media without the headache. Let's dive in and keep it simple.
Hi and welcome back to the show. Today we are diving into content marketing and joining me is Jakub Greitzer, the content marketing manager at Zenpilot. So you are known as the man behind streamlining project management, and Zenpilot is aiming about stopping endless tool hopping. But you're not only about marketing, a passionate public speaker, and also a musician playing bass. So yeah. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi, Elisa. It's super nice to be here. Thank you so much for the invite. And yeah, when you say it like that, I've got my fingers in quite a few pies there. That's true.
Well, it's always good to diversify. I'm always like, why to choose one thing when we can be so much more? So, content strategy, content marketing is our topic. So, the first basic question is, how to develop a content strategy for business that's consistent? Because I think consistency is quite the biggest challenge.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So when I think strategy, the first thing that comes to mind, strategy is not what you do, it's what you don't do. I've heard this piece of advice a variety of different times from a variety of different people. And I think especially like to set the context of where I am right now, I've done content marketing in like two different varieties, let's say. I've led a content team of 10 people back at my previous company at STX Next, started there as the sole marketer, and then the marketing team grew to 20 plus people, and I led a content marketing team of 10 there, you know? And there it's a problem of scale, of standards, of like quick review processes. Those are the issues to solve. But right now at Zenpilot, I'm one of two marketers. And in terms of strategy, the most important question we're asking ourselves is, where do we invest the time? Where do we not invest the time? How much, if you think of it as like a whole pie, you've got 100% of your time. How much do you invest in the proven strategies that work today versus the R&D of what might work tomorrow? So I think this is the question that you need to ask yourself first is, how you're going to handle that distribution. Second, I think a strategy is something, a content strategy is something that's born out of creating a consistent feedback loop with your audience. And this is a mistake that I'm seeing way too much in content marketing today, where the goal is to push the content out, and that's like, phew, okay, done. And that's really the halfway point where, once you have a piece of content out there, it's really time to start hunting for these conversations, for these pieces of feedback. And I do mention conversations deliberately because, of course, analytics can tell you a lot, right? This got 100 views, this got 1,000 views, but it's so easy to get caught up in like vanity metrics of, and I've seen it where we had, our top performing pieces of content, they might have gotten thousands of sessions in Google Analytics, but when we looked at sales and deals, these were not the pieces of content that were being referred to as, yeah, that actually made me want to buy or made me discover the brand. So it's incredibly important to close that feedback loop, to have these conversations with your audience. And those are kind of some of the basic building blocks there.
So I think you touched on a couple of things that that really spoke to me, because one, the thing you said, like our clients are both, we have clients that are big teams where really it's more about work, team workflows and coordinations, but we do have also a lot of teams, and I think we're seeing it more and more, that you have those marketing teams when you're just basically everything and everyone is doing a little bit. So especially in that setup, you invest so much time in content creation. And it's often underrated, of course, by the rest of organization. We're just the funny people doing the reels, right? And when you invest so much time, obviously, one, you have this disappointment of not having even a vanity metric, but then it's easy to get caught up in, oh my gosh, this went viral, but then so what with whom it yeah. went viral, right? So for me personally, as a content creator as well, the biggest challenge is to figure out how to make content that stands out. So I would be curious to hear your take on it. How to, I mean, I think you hinted already, but what would you say is the best approach?
So this is something that I personally love to preach about, especially these days where, you know, AI content is about to overtake everything. And that's, you know, I think brands, organizations are thinking about creating content when they really should be thinking about creating content creators. Okay, it's so easy to create like faceless generic content. It takes almost no effort at all. Anything that you can do to add flavor, to add uniqueness to your content is going to be a big plus. And I think the biggest opportunity here lies in the personal brands of your employees. You should be really thinking about, you know, for each content series that you're going to launch, there should be a face to it. So for example, when I joined Zenpilot, we had I would not say necessarily a generic newsletter, but the newsletter was not strictly personality driven. And I pushed it much further in that direction. Rebranded the newsletter, gave it a different name. It's called First Class Operations right now. And you can go to zenpilot.com/newsletter to sign up. And it's not your typical fare for a B2B newsletter, because I start off by saying, you know, like how things are going with my band, or, you know, in one of the first editions, I shared the story that I did tie to a business lesson, but it involved my grandma and us playing cards and her saying, you know, I can't get distracted. I gotta see where my bread is coming from. Because that's what she always says when she wants to get back to actually playing the cards. What I mean by this is, and you know, at the start of the newsletter, it says, this is your Captain Kuba speaking, you know, welcome to First Class Operations. It's almost as if I'm hosting a show, but it's in written form, it's via email. I think that is going to happen more and more. People are going to be following creators. You should start raising these creators up from your company roster. Work hard to keep them too, because when these creators move from company to company, people are going to follow them. And it's a natural tendency for us. We want to recommend, you know, how often do you get recommended content by a particular brand? Sometimes, but more often it's like, read this guy's book, you know, read, or like check out this guy's or this person's YouTube channel. That's only going to happen more and more. And, you know, when talking about personality, I'm not saying everything needs to be quirky and fun. You know, it doesn't always have to go in the direction of that archetype, but it needs to be distinct. You know, if you want your business to be very buttoned up, then okay, lean more into that, but it still should be tied. Like, you know, I can see that our marketing is working. For example, there's a quirk about me where my full name is Jakub Grajcar, but everybody calls me Kuba. And for a Polish audience, it's like super obvious. For anybody not Polish, it's like a Robert versus Bob type of situation, right? So if somebody emails me or messages me or mentions me and they use Kuba, I know they've encountered me, typically through the Zenpilot newsletter. Recently, that ran some client stories and it was like talking with old friends, because they recognized me personally from that newsletter we sent out, even though
from
it was my
personal newsletter. Yeah,
exactly. And I think that company should be doing more and more. You're starting a new content series. Okay, your company brand is going to be in there, but here's, you know, John, here's Mary, here's Kuba, here's Eliza, and, you know, focus on them and give them also the space to throw in a little bit of, you know, personal info, or like throw in a personal anecdote. You know, when I do project management for my household chores, for example, I do this and that. And within ClickUp, because Zenpilot's whole thing is ClickUp consulting, you can also manage things for your business. Very basic example, right? But I think this is where things are going right now, where it's really about to be a lot more personality driven. On top of that, I would add, not just, and also, you know, so that's kind of the first step to identify the voices within your company and make them a lot more distinct. Second, I think content marketers are missing an opportunity to kind of participate in the discourse a little bit more around their chosen subject matter. What I mean is, you know, because everybody wants to be kind of seen as the authority on a certain topic, we're kind of hesitant to include other voices, you know, other expert voices sometimes, right? Because we should be the go-to for this topic. But I think it makes you, yeah, exactly. But I think it makes you much more genuine and, you know, your insights much more believable when you actually do take, you know, another company's point of view, another expert's point of view, confront it, you know, find parts of it that you agree with, parts of it that you disagree with. Or even, I personally love this type of content myself, where it's like you start a blog post, it's about social media strategies. It's not you speaking from the top of the mountain about what works and what doesn't, but you've spoken with 15, 20 experts and you've gathered their, you know, best tips, and you put that into a much more full-featured piece of content. I think that's going to be like the pieces of content that are like a platform in itself. I feel like those are going to get more popular as time goes on because it's more genuine. It's, you know, it has more nuance in there.
Yeah. It's amazing that you say that by chance, but I think it's really a theme. It's the seventh episode in the series, and in every single episode, every one of my guests, regardless of the topic, everyone says personal brand, be authentic, be you, because that's what people want. So to our listeners out there, if you want a takeaway message, there's really something on it. But I really like your take about making it personal, because there is a difference between being authentic in the terms like, oh, this is me, this is how I am, but also not being afraid to really get up close and share something from you, because I think ultimately humanity loves stories. This is what we do. That's why we love to binge watch series. That's why people there are still people who read books, and that's why I think we sank so much into video content, because we just love stories. And if you see a very I have this, that when I see a highly visually satisfying story, even if it's a reel, you got me. It's really good to go down that route. And I think the second part, as you mentioned before, also paying attention to your audience. So I want to talk to you about kind of the thing you do. The tool for content planning and management, because that's one of we know this is a challenge. We have a plan and the plan is good, and then halfway through the week you're like, crap, I don't have my content plan. So and this is something that's your daily bread and butter, so could you talk to us a little bit about that?
So this will obviously, well, maybe not so obviously, but this will go into kind of how I landed at Zenpilot in the first place. So to tell that story a little bit, I first encountered ClickUp, which is one of the leading project management tools right now. At the time, it was still kind of niche, you know, competing with Trello, Asana, Jira, the other types of tools in that space. And I really fell in love with it because it was really flexible. And flexibility is really ClickUp's thing, where you can have the same data presented in a variety of different ways. You've got a list of tasks. You want this to be not a list, but a board? You got it. You want this to be on a calendar? You got it. You want to filter out certain people, filter out certain tags, group it by tag, group it by status? You got all of that. Unfortunately, with this whole freedom comes a great deal of, okay, so now there's 17 different ways that I can set up my content calendar, for example. How do I actually do that within ClickUp? I had these questions. I started looking for answers, and I found Zenpilot. Historically, Zenpilot is ClickUp's first solutions partner, so they were the first ever, and still, you know, I mean, I would say that, but they are the number one partner. You know, when ClickUp was running one of their biggest events recently, we were the one case study of a partner that they actually shot a specific video for, et cetera, et cetera. So why I talk about ClickUp is that it really is a tool that can help you. I mean, we primarily use ClickUp to, we introduce agencies to ClickUp and do consulting in that space. Because you really can have all of your business running on ClickUp, from growth, sales, marketing, through delivery for clients. And it really helps in that regard to keep things standardized and smooth with templates, all the way to your internal operations. ClickUp can handle all of it if you set it up correctly. So now, and I mean, this could be a whole, like, I encourage the listeners to check out the Zenpilot channel where we have a ton of tutorials on this. But just to start, it's really important to think about your team members' to-do lists, like their daily personal to-do lists. And I think what you should be striving for is for these to-do lists to be standardized and to live in one tool, which is not easy. I've seen it many times, this anti-pattern of, okay, I've got my projects here and I update them once every 3 days with some sort of project status update, but my personal to-do is like in a notepad on my computer, right? But try to avoid that because that's only going to cause discrepancies and kind of lag in the way information flows. So within ClickUp, again, it's a very full-featured tool, and I wouldn't want to take up like all of the airtime with this. But what you can do is you can set up, you know, templates for all of your deliverables so that every time you do a blog post, it's the same set of steps. They're all dependent on one another. So if you've got like 4 different team members working on a blog post, you will see there's a neat little icon next to it. This task is blocking another person, or for this mm-hmm. task, you need to wait on another person to actually finish something. It's like a chain of events, you know? This is really helpful. And especially once you have these, because, you know, big projects with big deadlines, you know, you tend to kind of push them to the last minute, or, you know, it can cause miscommunication where it's like, okay, I need to finish this blog post this week, but there's also an email campaign that I was supposed to help with, and I didn't know it was coming up, or I forgot. With ClickUp, what you can do is you have a big, what we call a parent task, break it down into subtasks, and the subtasks have very specific due dates. So when you hear due dates, you're probably thinking DUE dates. But what we preach at Zenpilot is DO dates. So that, you know, the whole project has a deadline, okay? But each step in the process, it needs to be small enough that you can complete it in one day, and it falls on that day, and you do it that day. This is the key.
Satisfying because you get
exactly.
Yeah. The moment you click that done status, it's like,
exactly. And this is where the Zen comes in, where it's not easy to do. And it takes a lot of upfront planning, creating templates and breaking processes down, you know, even into like multiple rounds of like, you're doing a first draft of a blog. It takes, you know, multiple subtasks because it's like first sitting, second sitting, third sitting, then you've got the first draft. But once you've done that, once you've set up these templates, one, they're easily replicable. Two, you finally have it so that your team members' to-do lists live in one platform. You can view them, you can check the status, and then they get the clarity and the satisfaction of, okay, after all this planning, everything set up on a timeline, this is what my day looks like today. These are the tasks, and only these tasks are what is to be done today, and then I am done. I can pull something in from tomorrow's list if I have extra time, but if not, I'm done for the day. And that is an incredibly satisfying Zen feeling, right? So again, deep topic, and I can go more into this if you'd like. If not, then zenpilot.com, we've got a whole resources section there. A bunch of rules or like tenets of how to use ClickUp. The ClickUp themselves don't give you upfront. They really emphasize the flexibility. That's great, but it's also good to follow.
But I see how it can make you feel lost and then also not to use the full potential of the tool.
Exactly.
So I think, you know, I heard a couple of things. So one is kind of make your life easier by developing like a set way to approach things when you plan content marketing, mm-hmm. and just invest that time upfront in having a workflow. And I can tell that also from a personal experience that if you don't have a workflow, things can go south very easily. So sometimes, especially if you are in a smaller team, you have this temptation to, I don't have time for this. So I don't have time to figure out how is the process. But having a process saves you time in the long run. And then it just, you know, it gives you a lot of peace of mind as well. I'm personally a process freak and I love to have a good process, but even for people who are like, man, I don't like to click around, it pays off because it's just it pays off in the long run because you save so much time if you know what you need to do and if other people know what you're doing and they're not constantly like asking like, hey, what about that thing, where are you at? So
Yeah, and you know, these days there's ways, there's definitely ways to make process documentation easier and like tactics that you can use. So for example, at Zenpilot, we love to use Loom, right? If you've got very limited time and you want to share with the team how you run a process, okay, run through that process with Loom running in the background, and then you know, you can take that transcription, punch it into AI, and to say, okay, this is, you know, a lot of words. Can you turn that into like a list of steps to follow? Once you have that list of steps, actually, when you have text in rows, you can paste that into ClickUp, and it turns it into individual subtasks automatically. It asks you to do that. So that gives you a big boost right off the bat. And there's more and more tools like that coming into play every day. Oh, for anybody who hasn't heard yet of Tango or Scribe, these are two great tools for this as well. They work differently from Loom. What you do is it's a plugin in your browser. You press record, and then it records all of your clicks within a tool, automatically creates screenshots and annotates them. So if you're doing something complicated in HubSpot, for example, oh yeah, that's a thing. If you're doing something complicated in HubSpot, for example, then it outputs like a full page. You don't have to do anything extra. Go to contacts, go to lists, go to this list, go to this option, and it really leads you through it like step by step. We use that a lot at Zenpilot too for documenting processes.
Wow. Well, this blows my mind. And especially for people who don't like to write. And that was the blog. Like I really hate, I used to, funny enough, I used to work in banking before. And I was writing policies, and for me, sitting down to write a policy step by step or like a step by step instruction, it was the definition of torture. So having that kind of at hand is just mind blowing. It's like, wow.
Yeah, those tools can be a breakthrough, especially for, like I said, for working through complicated tools like, you know, HubSpot or maybe Salesforce. That can be a real time saver.
Yeah, and then you actually don't forget. I think the beauty of it is you have a certain workflow in your mind, and you just, it flows naturally, versus if you try to do it the old school way, recreating that in your mind, you can also very easily forget stuff. So that's really, you blew my mind for a second right there. And coming back to the content itself. So we all know we need to make different content for different platforms. So from your experience, what's the best way to do that, and how to balance that with content repurposing that we all love?
Well, when I think about tailoring content for specific platforms, honestly, it gives me some anxiety to think about it, because there's so much to do. And we content marketers, I mean, we like to keep a high bar of quality. This is certainly something that I, like a trap that I've fallen into in, you know, in the younger years of my career, where I try to make every blog post a total piece of art. You know, I just finished my MA in English and I wanted to show it, damn it. However, for me, the question of tailoring to different platforms is a question of ROI, okay? And you have to find the sweet spot for each individual platform where that's going to fall. So, you know, thinking on the distribution side, you know, throwing something on a Facebook group, if it's specialized enough, the bar is kind of low, because, for example, for ClickUp, you know, they want ClickUp content. It's enough for me to write like 5 sentences of copy and a link, or like comment to get the link in a DM. That's worked for us quite well to promote events, for example, when they're ClickUp oriented and it's a ClickUp group. Here the bar is kind of low and the ROI is excellent. You know, it doesn't take me a long time to craft that post, and then it's just responding to the comments to kind of hack the algorithm that way. Contrast this with something like Reddit, where you can also do content distribution, but everybody's BS radar is just so fine tuned, you know, like, brand be gone. You're a marketer. Get out of here. This is our space.
Yeah, where
right?
do you want to shove it and go sell somewhere else? And just like,
how dare you? Exactly. And there, and you can get good results from Reddit. I've seen people who've done it. I just saw a post on LinkedIn from, I think, Ross Simmons, who is the create once, distribute forever guy. Every content marketer should be exposed to his ideas, I think. And, you know, and he's been saying that it's been a very kind of fruitful platform for, but the approach needs to be totally different, right? Leave multiple comments on various other subreddits. Really, you need to seem like a real account or almost like be a real account, invest that time. And it once every 10 comments, you know, never actually promote your stuff in the Reddit post itself, but the real gold is in the comments, you know, where it's like, okay, you get a specific question. Okay, we actually do have a piece of content about that. Here it is. So it needs to be really...
Yeah, but you come from a piece of, if I wouldn't be working from that company, I would give you that advice. And I'm not giving you that advice because I work for that company.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. This is how I try to structure my Reddit comments as well. It's like, you know, my company does this. We have these resources. I mean, it's like, I try to make it personal still, you know? Or like, I often mention the story of how I joined Zenpilot because I was really enthusiastic about ClickUp. So especially if you're a small team, you need to think about how much for a given channel you need to tailor the content and do you have time to do it. And I would argue it's easier to start with some of the more forgiving channels like YouTube, for example, where we've really had examples of, you know, our YouTube videos. Some of them are just Loom videos with some additional, you know, like an additional like slide at the end with some music, like subscribe to the channel thrown in there. It's a quick edit in Veed, for example. But so, you know, if it's a new ClickUp feature, we want to put something out fast, then it's good enough to have, you know, a decent mic, a Loom video, screen share, click through the new feature, and then you're the first to post about it on YouTube. And the YouTube SEO algorithm can be really, really useful here, especially if you've got something to latch onto that's like fruitful in terms of SEO. For us, phrases, keywords related to the tool, ClickUp, have been really good, right? So, you know, find something where you can actually hit that sweet spot rather consistently, because if you found a good channel, but every time you need to leverage it, it's, you know, it's a very heavy lift. That can be not the best particular fit for your brand. On the other hand, though, there are ways, in my opinion and in my experience, to reuse the exact same piece of content on multiple platforms in some cases. And that can be, for example, shorts, you know, but you need to be think about it, vertical video, I mean, short form vertical video, but you need to be thinking about it from the get-go. So for example, when I was producing shorts, and I am producing shorts from our shows here at Zenpilot, one of them being Agency Journey, the podcast that I now host, you know, you need to think about where the captions are positioned on the screen, because the UI is a little bit different on Instagram versus YouTube versus TikTok. And, you know, it cannot be obscured by the UI in any of those. Or in terms of the length, most of the platforms can take longer than a minute. But if you want to send everything out on all platforms, then YouTube still has that 1 minute shorts limit, which I really hope they're going to move sometime in the future, because it's really limiting, in my opinion.
Social media management tools help a great way, because then you have that all in one posting, which sure. helps greatly. But then the social media platforms don't give us they don't make it easier, because everyone has a different format and they're changing stuff all the time. Instagram is annoying the hell out of me because now they're changing my buttons all the time. So still... we need to somehow find a good balance between repurposing and finding appropriate content lengths, formats, and all that stuff. But social media management tools like ours or the other guys help greatly. Yeah.
True. And if I may, just one last thought on the subject of, you know, tailoring or repurposing. I think it's also important for written content to be thinking in advance of where you're going to repurpose that content. This is something that I learned the hard way here at Zenpilot, where I no longer have a team of 10, where I can pass work from, okay, here's a newsletter, turn it into, you know, social media posts. Here's a blog, turn it into, well, social media posts again, often, because that seems to be the last step very often. But now it's I'm realizing that I don't have somebody to lean on to delegate to. As I write the blog post, as I write the newsletter, I try to make every section easy enough to just copy paste into LinkedIn, for example, you know, with minimal edits. And it actually helps you approach the process of writing kind of more piece by piece. And I've had really cool, you know, success with it, where it's like, I wrote a piece about standard operating procedures. It had 9 kind of body chapters. I looked at them. This was actually a realization that I made by accident. I looked at them and I said, hey, they're the right length. And I've actually structured the first lines of each section by accident in a way where it's like, okay, I can paste these into LinkedIn. I can schedule 9 posts within an hour and get my content to do so much more for me. And when you're, you know, a bootstrapped content team, you need to be thinking about this. Never use, you know, a piece of text or, you know, or some footage only once. That's a huge waste. Always be thinking about how you can use it multiple times each time and make it a consistent process.
And now the question that everyone loves. So we talked at the beginning about vanity metrics, but what do you think? What makes sense as a measure of success of your content strategy? What metrics or what is for you? How would you define that this is a successful content strategy?
I feel like this is the question that keeps content marketers up at night.
You know, I know, the everyone one question. Hates it. Everyone hates it and there's no good answer.
Yeah, there really aren't, not right now. I mean, I'm keeping a close eye on tools like HockeyStack that are kind of promising that you'll be able to measure things that don't seem measurable to me at first glance, like, for example, podcast listens, which, wow, I would love to know, especially since I'm involved in Zenpilot's podcast. But to begin answering that question, I feel like the most kind of honest answer you can get here is, you know, from the audience, the leads, the prospects themselves. So, I, you know, answering this question, I would begin kind of from the sale backwards, you know, and it won't give you a totally clear picture. But first of all, talk with your salespeople and make sure that it's consistent within their script to ask, how did you find out about us? At Zenpilot, we use Avoma. We've got our sales conversations recorded, which is a huge blessing because I get to actually have a look at these conversations where they're recorded and to hear them talk about our content and validate a lot of our assumptions. For example, we have this huge ebook about ClickUp and we promoted it via LinkedIn through one of these comment to get it types of campaigns. Yeah. And people are literally referencing that on the sales call. I mean, this is where you can actually get some objective truth as to whether the content worked. I saw this post, left a comment, got the content, and it worked out exactly the way we wanted it to, where they saw it's 50 pages. That's cool. If I had the time, I would self-implement, but I thought I might as well just talk with this consultancy with Zenpilot and see if they can do it for me. Perfect. And then you have real validation, right? And I think you won't be able to maybe necessarily do that for each individual piece of content, which is really why you should be thinking about, you know, whole channels or like bigger pieces of content or campaigns. So that is a very useful first step. Second, self-reported attribution. If you don't have that on your forms yet, on your contact forms, I'm talking more in a B2B context. That is huge. So the way and this is something that I actually implemented as soon as I joined Zenpilot, added that additional question on the form, how did you hear about us? And while it doesn't always tell the full picture because there's multiple touch points along the way, even that is interesting. When you make it a single choice, what do they point to? So they may have seen our blog.
Yeah, what's in the awareness? Yeah.
Exactly. What is the actual thing, the one thing that they point to? Very often for Zenpilot, it's our YouTube channel. Sometimes they just choose the option of web search, which tells us it's probably SEO, but doesn't always tell the full story. So again, you can't have like clear, definitive answers here, not easily, but you can always put together these different pieces. And the next thing I would say here is content marketers should really strive to have more conversations, one-to-one conversations with the audience. Like if you ran an event, okay, as a content marketer, maybe event marketer, the titles vary. I'm content, I run a lot of events. If you see somebody who's super engaged in the comments, or you see somebody in the comments who you, I don't know, recognize from your HubSpot pipeline or whichever, you know, strike up that conversation. How did you find it? Do you have any feedback? You know, what's some other piece of content you would like to see from us? Or, you know, what you've seen thus far? It will really help illuminate, you know, what they've consumed, you know, what they appreciate about the content you're putting out. And again, if you were to ask just one question, the question that I always go to is like, what was most useful for you? Mm-hmm. Okay, you know, you want to identify the gaps too, but do more of what works can get you really far. So you need to find out what's been working. On top of that, of course, you know, there's good analytics. There's using UTM campaign tags. On our YouTube videos, each individual video has a specific UTM campaign tag associated with it. So within HubSpot and on our Slack, because we have that automation, we can see, you know, when people download an ebook or book a call, not even that they came from YouTube, which they can select that option themselves, but within our more detailed analytics automatic, I can see it was our video about, you know, ClickUp for agencies, our video about ClickUp task types, our video about ClickUp AI. That is great to see. That is great to be able to actually reliably measure. So yeah, use unique links as much as possible. They take a little bit of extra work, but it's worth it.
Yeah. By the way, I forgot to ask you before. So do you have any good tool for YouTube SEO to check like the phrases or?
I don't have one that I have myself used. I recently produced one of the Agency Journey episodes, and there they built a HubSpot channel, you know, HubSpot Hacks, one of the biggest unofficial HubSpot channels out there on YouTube right now. And they pointed to a few things. One was competitor research. So just check, you know, because when you look at your competitors, they already released the video. You can quite clearly see what it's tailored to in terms of keyword. Did it have above average results for them? Then it might have above average results for you. And in terms of specific tools, I hear TubeBuddy recommended quite a bit, although I haven't used it myself as of yet. But if there was one that I would research, then it would be probably that one.
Yeah. Thanks for that, because I'm also personally searching currently for something for that. All right. And then, of course, everyone wants to always, you know, play the fortune teller and see what's coming. So what's your take on, you know, future trends and the future of content creation and distribution? And will the machines take our jobs?
Yeah, I mean, that is a big question. And I think there's a variety of ways to approach it. So I don't normally get into the whole, you know, where civilization as a whole going stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
we're doomed. That's already a given, right?
Yeah, is it going to be dystopia, utopia? My personal vote is on dystopia, unfortunately, because greed is going to get to us. And, you know, it's not that we'll all be out of a job and happy about it because we won't have to work. It will be out of a job and scrambling to find something that the machines can't do yet. I guess I did give my take there, but limiting it more towards content marketing. Some of this I've already touched upon before, but I think more and more people are going to want content with a face and like real proof
and
a literal human face. Yeah. Animated human face on video, and there will probably be some kind of like, I've seen the deepfakes, the newest ones where they do like the micro expressions, you know, all that different stuff, and it's being emulated quite well. So you're gonna have to do, I don't know, like a magic trick, but something very distinctly human, you know, or something that AI can replicate, you know, or like big gestures, something that's not easy to do. For AI just yet, just to verify.
Hands, because AI still doesn't do well with hands.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I can see that definitely happening. So I think, you know, YouTube is bound to continue to grow. I would, you know, if I were starting a new content marketing motion right now, if YouTube is in any way a fit for you, I would invest time there. Because the sweet spot, I think, is really great for YouTube right now. There's a ton of competition, but if you're like in a niche B2B space, there's still tons of gaps that you can easily fill with your content. And, you know, and you get rewarded by the algorithm, you get distributed, you know, on your own if you hit the right topics and, you know, you've got the right level of quality, which, again, isn't too difficult to beat depending on the space you're in. So I think that is going to become more prevalent. Short form vertical video, in my opinion, is here to stay just because of the way we are wired psychologically. I mean, I've got the same as my two-year-old. I like to look at faces, you know, we can never get away from that. So if it's a face talking to us emphatically, the captions are so much easier to produce these days. So if I like to read, I can read the captions. You know, I can predict a future in which those two formats, written and video, kind of get more joined together. So if you're seeing, like, let's say you're scrolling your feed, you're seeing a vertical video with captions, but you want to, like, you want to scan through it, right? It can be like a swipe or like a button on your screen, and then you've got the exact same content, perfect transcription in text form.
Yeah.
And you know, you can scan through it as well. I think these two might become more one-to-one as time goes on, because the tools there are almost ready to do that. It's just a matter that the platforms don't support it that well from a UI perspective. And then next, I think, given that there's about to be so much more content out there, creation is still going to be important, but content curators are going to be much more rewarded. The types of people that can actually dive into that sea of, you know, a lot of generic content with some gems in there, and they can actually get the gems out of there, put them in a collection, and send them your way. Either yeah, whether it's like
personalized, tailored to you approach.
Exactly. There's ways to automate that with AI as well. And I've seen like these cool recommendation engines in place. Although personally, like what I would almost pay for is, you know, somebody who really takes care to surface, you know, not the kind of bland and repeated content marketing insights, but stuff that's really, you know, fresh, a little bit contrarian, maybe, you know, against the status quo. And if 90% of the market is saying, you know, this tactic is going to work, everybody's doing it, there's the 10% that is one step ahead, and that's the kind of content you want to get. And the best curators are going to find the bleeding edge, you know, not the people who are echoing what the main experts are saying, but the small voices that are already talking about the next step, but they haven't been surfaced yet that much.
It's the people that know something we don't know yet about. This is where we want to kind of take their brain and suck it out.
yeah, exactly. And the last thing I can see is paid content becoming more popular, to be honest. Like, there's going to be so much. I mean, it can go in a variety of ways, but personally, I think like paid video courses or even paid content collections might become more popular because people are waking up to the fact that, you know, a lot of the information on the internet isn't getting any younger, right? So a lot of the information is outdated, that now we're thinking whether it's, you know, AI generated, hallucinated. So I think people are going to be willing to open their wallets to get something, you know, verified, something, you know, where and it might be tied to a personal brand, so somebody's kind of putting their reputation on the line that this is legit. I think this is where we might end up going. Like, you know, you can look at stuff like, you know, Patreon. You know, people are willing more and more to invest in that kind of the deepest content from their most favorite creators. I think that's going to become more and more popular as time goes on, because it'll be just that more difficult to find the good stuff in this whole flood of generic content.
Yeah, and it's an overwhelm that happens for so many fields. So getting something personalized again by a human, I can totally see that coming. So as we come to an end, we do this with all our guests. We have a series of the Cat's Purr, a series of more personal questions.
Cool.
So what's your social media platform of choice and why?
That's definitely LinkedIn. I feel like it's one of the few platforms where I can actually learn a ton. If you follow the right people, you know, it's like it's such a nice, fair fight right now where people are kind of fighting between each other to surface, you know, good insights, tactics you can steal. I've learned a lot and found a lot of, you know, resources like books, courses, YouTube channels via LinkedIn. So if you're not leveraging that for self-learning, I would suggest that you try, you know, follow some of the accounts that are out there. And I can recommend a few in content marketing. Like, you could follow James Carberry, for example. He's great about building media brands. And I got to interview him last year, actually, which was super great. Or people like Marcus Sheridan of the Ask You Answer fame. And you know, once you start following these accounts, And of course, Jakub Greitzer, I mean, that's one's obvious.
Yeah.
Once you start following these accounts, then you can see kind of other people that they refer to. It's like a nice, especially for B2B content, it's like a nice network where, you know, people have got varied enough POVs. You really can learn a ton from LinkedIn. I really recommend it.
Awesome. And aside from searching LinkedIn for valuable content, is there anything right now that you read, watch, or listen to that you would recommend to our readers? Something that kind of like blew your mind recently?
It's funny because these days I'm really into podcasts, but not podcasts such as this. I love audio dramas. I love fiction podcasts, you know? I'm a dad with a very busy schedule, so I don't really get to like sit down in front of a TV to watch some Netflix, not usually. However, I've got a lot of chores to do where my ears are super idle, so I use that and I listen to podcasts. And there's a few there. My love lately has been one called Wolf 359. It's a sci-fi podcast. It's like an old radio show. Lots of laughs, but a lot of mystery in there as well. And I've got some horror podcasts that I also love. I'm going to name drop a few. If you want to get started in horror podcasts, you should check out, in roughly that order, the Magnus Archives. It really develops into a whole overarching plot over time. Give it a little bit of time to ramp up. Malevolent. And as you listen to it, it's all one guy doing the voices. You'll be shocked.
Wow.
Yeah, and my number three would be The White Vault. It's got a bit of a different vibe, you know, multinational cast, a lot of foreign languages in there, but I really love that one. So, like, if any of you discover any of those podcasts through this conversation, they'll be so happy because they're so, so good. People are sleeping on audio dramas, really. There's some really good storytelling in there.
Yeah, no, I love it. And I remember, like, when I was a child, there used to be those radio shows. That would have like books being read out or dramas being read out, and I used to listen to a lot of radio when I was a child because my mom would put on the radio always when she would do something around the house, and I'm thinking like, yeah, this is just like, it's having such a nice renaissance because people love it. It's amazing. I'm also like a huge podcast fan for this precise reason, that you can, you know, you can put it in the background and do stuff. And then finally, the question of all questions, dogs or cats?
Cats. I mean, I like both, but I do own a cat, and I love the way that, you know, with dogs, that they react to everything you do, and that's nice, you know, they really seek your approval. But with a cat, you can really feel chosen, you know. When I'm having a tough day at work, and our cat comes in and she starts purring and she very obviously wants to get on my lap, and then I don't get to go to the toilet for 45 minutes.
But I'm the luckiest man alive.
Yes. I shouldn't be so happy about this, but I am.
Oh, exactly. We all know this feeling. I got to be chosen. Thank you, master.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, cats, for that reason, it's like a little bit of a preference towards cats.
Kuba, thank you for the wonderful conversation. If you want to find Kuba, then obviously the LinkedIn would be the way to go. And you're all over the Zen Pilot YouTube channel, I would suspect. So head over there to find out more about how to make ClickUp a dream in your processes. I certainly feel inspired to do so. And yeah, thank you so much for the conversation. As usual, I'm ending this podcast. Always have a perfect time. I know it's cheesy, but I love to say it. So have a perfect time, everybody. And I wish that everybody would be chosen by a cat. Thank you.
Lovely. Thank you, Eliza.
Thanks for listening. And remember to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform for more social media knowledge and our latest insights. And hey, if you found today's episode helpful, consider leaving us a review or sharing it with a friend. Got questions or topics you'd love us to cover? Drop us a message on our social media. And until the next episode, remember to keep it simple. Bye!